Okay, Mr. Sellers, Carley versus AT&T Mobile.
Yes. Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm Joseph Sellers representing Amanda Carley in seeking a reversal of the denial of class certification below. Before turning to the jurisdictional questions that the court has posed, I'd like to briefly summarize substantively why I think the ruling on class certification was an error.
I think we need to talk about jurisdiction first, Mr. Sellers.
Fair enough. Okay.
Let me start by asking you this question.
Okay.
An intervener like Ms. Carley needs to file a complaint and intervention, right?
Correct.
A complaint under the civil rules is a pleading that sort of gets things started in terms of a civil action.
Correct.
At the time Ms. Carley took her appeal, that complaint was pending.
That's correct.
How can there be a final order?
All right, I want to speak to what the final order is, if I may. The final order here, it comes from the fact that there was a final dismissal of the decision of the original named plaintiffs, which by virtue of relinquishing their right to appeal the class certification decision because they have foregone it, that transforms it into a final order that's subject to
appeal. For them it might have, and they may not have been able to appeal because they were not adverse, the ruling was not adverse to them. But if I agree with you that there was a level of finality as to the initial named plaintiffs, but Ms. Carley had to file a complaint and intervention, and that complaint was pending with no action taken against it
right
at the time that you filed your notice of appeal. And for me, I have trouble seeing how there's a final order as to your client.
So the reason there's a final order is, as I said, perhaps haven't make it clear, is that under the Coopers and Librand, for instance, line of cases, the court recognized that there are two avenues for appeal from denials of class certification. At the end of the original parties who sought class certification, after they adjudicate their claims, they can appeal. Or if they relinquish that, as they did here, then the members of the absent class members can intervene for the purpose of taking in their stead. So there's no reason there has to be a ruling on the complaint before Ms. Carley can take this
appeal. So your position is there doesn't have to be a ruling on the merits of anyone's claims, not the original plaintiffs nor Ms. Curley's claims.
That, with respect, the only thing that has to be ruling on and was on class certification.
Okay, so I think in those cases that you're citing and that you cite in your supplemental submission, there was at least a ruling on the merits of something. I mean, I think this might be a different situation if the original plaintiffs had gotten a ruling on the merits of their claims and had decided not to appeal the class. I guess why is it as an intervener you can appeal when the original plaintiffs could not appeal?
Well, so first of all, I think in McDonald there was a settlement, and then the court dismissed their claim, and as a result, the plaintiffs petition for the intervened and appealed. So I don't agree that there has to have been a final order on the merits. And indeed here, I believe the stipulation of dismissal by the original plaintiffs qualifies as a final order on the merits.
Yeah, in a normal circumstance, maybe you're right, but the Supreme Court said in Microsoft versus Baker that that's not in fact a final order that would allow those original plaintiffs to appeal. So I'm trying to figure out why it is, and I think you agree with that the original plaintiffs would not be able to appeal, right?
Yes, but for a reason that we should discuss. It's not just that's not as simple as that, I think. The reason is because they reserve their right to renew their claim. So their dismissal with prejudice was not a final dismissal, not a final order, unlike the dismissal here with prejudice, which was.
Well, you always reserve the right to renew your claims when you...
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
Well, I guess if you're appealing the underlying issue, then if you win on appeal, you would undo everything, right?
Well, that's right. But there's no... But the court was saying that there's no final order there, and they represented there was a final order. And so there is no basis on which, in that case, the stipulation of dismissal qualified as the final order that it is here.
Let me talk about this in a very practical way.
Okay.
The original plaintiffs who moved to certify a class and made arguments about why this is would be an appropriate class action, how there were common issues, how there was typicality, how they were adequate representatives, are no longer here. And you want to somehow, intervening afterwards, litigate effectively on their behalf whether a class action should have been certified. It seems to me, remember, you have a complaint and intervention. You could make a case for why your action should be certified as a class action, why your client is an adequate representative, how commonality and typicality are satisfied. But what you want to complain about instead on appeal is why these dismissed parties should have had a certified class action. So that makes zero sense to me.
All right. Well, I'm sorry that, but let me try to persuade you otherwise.
Okay.
So had Ms. Curley chosen instead to proceed to seek certification before the same court, which had already, in our view, misinterpreted the predominance and superiority requirements on this pretty much the same record, there would have been little chance she would have succeeded in that. And there,
you could have applied for permission to appeal under 23F.
And if that were denied the same way it was to the initial two named plaintiffs, then you would have been stuck in the same position they would have been, which is they had to litigate to the end to get the class cert issue up.
Right. And so, I don't understand why that you couldn't do it that way.
I don't mean this in a bad way.
That's all right.
This is sort of an end run around finality because Ms. Curley would be getting to do what the other two named class plaintiffs could not do absent settling of their claims.
So I want to come back to the nearly 50 years of precedent, starting with McDonald, then Roper and Garrity and Coopers and Librand, which recognized two avenues for appeal, one of which was, Judge Jordan, as you note, was to take your original claim all the way to finality and then appeal the denial of class certification. But there was another one they recognized, and I don't think we've really gotten to it yet, and that is that as an absent class member, once that order denying class certification was final, not interlocutory, because the original plaintiffs relinquished their ability to appeal it because they settled and dismissed their claims, that the absent class member could intervene at that point, as has happened in those cases.
If Ms. Curley had intervened before the settlement, assume they were represented by different counsel.
I understand.
If Ms. Curley got wind of the settlement by the other two named plaintiffs, and she was a putative class member but not certified yet, and she's like, oh, these two are going to settle. They're going to settle. I got to intervene because if not, I may be in trouble. She intervenes, moves to intervene. District court grants the motion for intervention. After the motion for intervention is granted, the other two parties settle, get their claims dismissed without prejudice. Can she take up an immediate appeal of the denial of class cert on a final judgment theory?
Well, I suppose it's possible, but may I just respond on the one point? Footnote 14 of the Supreme Court's decision in McDonald, footnote 15 in that decision, addressed the very question that you're posing, which, and counseled that potential interveners should not attempt, absent class members should not attempt to intervene until after the claim has been dismissed from the original plaintiffs. Otherwise, they would be premature in doing so. So we took that guidance from the Supreme Court in footnote 15 and waited.
Yeah, and I don't think these questions are suggesting that you couldn't intervene. I think the questions are suggesting, you know, you've intervened, you've got a complaint and intervention to litigate if you want to. Let me ask you this, which just follows up on Judge Pryor's question about the practical implications of this. The order that you're asking us to reverse is the order denying the former plaintiff's motion to certify a class, right?
That is correct.
So if we reverse that, then the district court will certify a class and declare those former plaintiffs to be the class representatives?
No.
Okay,
no.
Why not?
All right, because they have forever given up their claims.
Well, then who will be the class representative?
So if you were to remand and direct the court to reconsider this, we would submit Ms. Curley as a new named plaintiff. The court would have to make a new determination about representativeness and typicality.
But you can do that right now.
Right now. Yeah.
That's my entire point. But you can move to certify a class action based on your complaint and intervention, show why Ms. Curley is an adequate representative. If it's denied, you can apply for 23F appeal.
I understand. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. That, of course, was attempted before it was denied. And so...
Whoa.
The
original plaintiffs.
That's correct.
Ms. Curley hasn't done that.
No, I know that, but my point is there'd be no...
Well, that's my point. Ms. Curley hasn't done that, and she can do it.
I understand that. And the problem we face is that we want this court to give the district court direction about why it misapplied and misinterpreted the predominance.
You want us to give an advisory opinion about something that no longer matters, about some named plaintiffs who are no longer before the court would not be dispositive about whether Ms. Curley can maintain a class action, but it's something that she can ask for and get appellate review of, but it seems to me entirely premature.
So again, I want to call the court's attention, the McDonald line of cases, which recognized an independent, legally independent right for absent class members to intervene and come into the shoes of the original named plaintiffs who then relinquished their right to challenge the denial of class certification. There's no indication of those decisions
But if you step into their shoes, then you've got to run the gauntlet that they had to run.
Oh,
which is you have to run to final judgment.
Well, you have to. They have to. Then there's no presumption they'll get a class certified if that's Judge Jordan. They have to request that. Hopefully, with this court's direction about the predominance superiority requirements that were misinterpreted.
There's another potential technical problem, I think, and that is that Ms. Curley's complaint was not identical to the complaint filed by the initial two plaintiffs.
Well,
it differed. It added some things, right? And so it's not like, listen, I'm putting in the same complaint that they put in. I'm in the same exact shoes. Well, I haven't done a line-by-line comparison, but I know they're not the same.
Well, of course, because they're two separate individuals. But she's challenging the same application of the attendance policy as to pregnant employees that the original named plaintiffs were challenging for the very same reasons. So there's no difference substantively in terms of what's the gravamen of the complaint.
Okay, I think we understand, Mr. Sellers. You've saved 2 minutes for rebuttal. Let's hear from Mr. Gage.
Okay. May it please the court, I'm Ken Gage on behalf of AT&T. As just discussed, appellant has some significant jurisdictional hurdles to overcome before this court can get to the class certification denial.
And I know you probably want to talk about whether the district court has jurisdiction.
I would like to talk about both issues, Your Honor.
But I would suggest to you that we first have to determine whether we have jurisdiction. And we can't decide whether the district court has jurisdiction unless we have it. We have to first have it. And the questions we've been asking your adversary go to the question whether we have jurisdiction. And the other jurisdictional questions, as I understand them, that have been raised go to whether the district court has jurisdiction, a different issue. And if we don't have jurisdiction, then we can't address whether the district court has jurisdiction. You understand?
Understood, Your Honor.
I mean, you can push back against it. I'm open to hearing why I'm wrong about that, but I don't think I'm wrong about that.
As a practical matter, we think the lower courts need guidance on that question, but I appreciate Your Honor's position.
That'd be a nice advisory opinion, perhaps, but you understand why. If we don't have jurisdiction, we have to dismiss the appeal.
Understood, Your Honor.
In the same way that Ms. Curley may have to navigate the gauntlet of going to final judgment, you may need to go to final judgment to get some guidance on your side of the case, too.
Understood, Your Honor.
If the district court thinks it had jurisdiction to allow Ms. Curley to intervene, and you can't convince the court otherwise, then you're going to have to go all the way through judgment. And if you lose, then you're going to have to come up here and say the district court had no jurisdiction to allow Ms. Curley to intervene.
Understood, Your Honor.
Can I ask you to address the plaintiff's distinction of Microsoft versus Baker? So he says, opposing counsel says, look, Microsoft versus Baker, the original plaintiffs voluntarily dismiss, but then they're the ones who try to appeal, and that the final judgment assessment should be different here, where the original plaintiffs dismiss, but then an intervener tries to appeal. What do you say about that?
Your Honor, I would agree with the comments that Your Honors were making earlier. Ms. Curley has not taken her case to final judgment. She has a complaint, as it has been pointed out. And if Ms. Curley is properly in this case, and we disagree for the reasons set forth in our brief, we don't think the district court had jurisdiction to grant her petition to intervene. But if the district court did have jurisdiction to allow her into the case, there's a lot to do. This court has made clear that a final judgment occurs.
She could potentially get review, interlocutory review, if she moved to certify a class action and sought permission under 23F and it were granted, right?
Indeed, Your Honor. AT&T would answer her complaint. Presumably, we would have discovery. She could ask the district court to revisit the class certification question.
Well, it would be, not be really be even revisiting, would it? Because it's a question of whether to certify a class action on behalf of a different person with different allegations in her complaint, and presumably of someone who could make some different arguments that might persuade the district court that whatever it said with respect to the previous named plaintiffs, that maybe Ms. Curley's entitled to maintain a class action.
I agree completely with you, Your Honor. And by revisit, I just mean answer again. The district court has already said.
Yeah, but class, it has never answered the question whether Ms. Curley can maintain a class action.
I agree completely. And that is one of the many reasons why there is no final judgment. But the point about.
And she's not just here as some kind of absent class member for a class that was previously sought to be maintained. She's now intervened and has her own complaint. She's a named party.
Absolutely. And I prefer the term, Your Honor, former putative class member. Class certification was denied. And what we know from the Supreme Court's decision in American Pipe and Crown Court Conceal and China Agritech that Ms. Curley got the benefit of the putative class action pending for a period of time. Statute of limitations was told until it was denied. And then she became a former putative class member.
Yeah, what do you say about, on the final judgment issue, what do you say about his citation to McDonald and the idea that, you know, this is something that used to be done? What do you say about that?
McDonald, Your Honor, did not address the jurisdictional question that we're talking about, any of the jurisdictional questions that we're talking about. It was a narrow question about whether the district court abused its discretion, its discretionary authority, to decide whether or not something was timely. The footnote that my friend Mr. Sellers referred to, footnote 15, in McDonald, talking about the policy notion that putative class members should wait, is completely undermined by the Supreme Court's decision in China Agritech. As Justice Ginsburg made very clear in the court's opinion in China Agritech, if you want to represent a class, you should move early. You should step up early, and the district courts should have the opportunity to evaluate whether or not someone is a potential putative class member. And so we submit that McDonald was not a jurisdictional decision. It was a very narrow decision. But we also submit that the more recent decisions from the Supreme Court undermine the reading that my friend Mr. Sellers is trying to urge on it. And Coopers and Librand versus Livesay, we submit supports our position. That decision where the Supreme Court said it was not adopting the death knell theory explains the reasons why this very attempted appeal by Ms. Curley, where she's trying to foist on this court an appeal that this court decided not to take, doesn't make sense. Indeed, it is it would be a one-sided system. Plaintiffs and substitute plaintiffs could come back over and over and over again to revisit the class certification decision, while defendants would have to suffer through the litigation and go all the way to a judgment, a loss on a class case before it could appeal. It also would upset the balance between Court of Appeals responsibility and the district court's responsibility, which is the basis for the finality rule. I would like to, Your Honors, get to the district court's jurisdiction if I could.
Well, let me just ask you one more question about finality. It seems like, practically speaking, Ms. Curley's best argument on finality is that her claims are going to be barred by the statute of limitations. It just doesn't matter. I mean, the district court hasn't said that yet, but that's what's going to happen. So we can just sort of say, well, look, we see the district court's class action ruling. We know the district court's going to deny another class certification motion. We know that her merits claims would be denied under the statute of limitations. No need for any more litigation. We just know that's going to happen. Is that right? Like, what do you think would happen in the district court? And what do you say about that generally?
I'm glad you asked that question, Your Honor. It's a great question. First, I do think, certainly, if we do go back to the district court and we answer the complaint, one of our affirmative defenses will be the statute of limitations. And our hope and expectation is that we would win summary judgment. But the key point to remember, Your Honors, notwithstanding the tolling issue, Your Honor. And the key point, Your Honors, is that any one of us who has a cause of action in our system of justice has a statute of limitations. And Ms. Curley, as a former putative class member, for a period of time, she did indeed get a benefit from American pipe tolling. But that stopped when class certification was denied, and the clock started to run. And at that point, that's when she should have intervened. That's when she should have filed her own action, whether she wanted to pursue her individual claims or be a class representative. That's when she should have done it. And she would have had to have gone to final judgment, unless she could persuade this court to take a 23F appeal on a class certification decision. Now, I would like to get to the district court's jurisdiction, if your honors get past the first question.
Well, let me ask you this: on that issue on the district court's jurisdiction, I mean, just practically speaking, it seems like motions are filed in district courts post judgment all the time. I'm having a difficult time saying. I mean, if I were a district court judge, I might not want this motion. I might deny the motion. I might say this case is over. I don't want to do it anymore. No more new plaintiffs. But why is it a jurisdictional question that a district court loses jurisdiction to rule on a motion post judgment when there are all sorts of motions that are filed post judgment?
Sure. Well, Your Honor, first and foremost, McDonald does not answer that question. I just want to state that for the record. I think we can all agree on that. But more importantly, the Supreme Court's decision in Kokkonen tells us that when there is a Rule 41 stipulation of dismissal, that's it. Except
that's
for a couple.
That's the party's control. Once they've stipulated, the action's gone. There's no longer an action pending in which you can intervene. That's your argument, right?
That indeed is our argument, exactly. And Ms. Curley does not fit into either of the two narrow exceptions described in Kokkonen. The first, where you're trying to resolve two claims that are factually interdependent, and her claims are not factually interdependent with Ms. Allen's or Ms. Webb's. And indeed, she doesn't want to litigate them with those. She wants to litigate them separately. And the second scenario described by the Supreme Court in Kokkonen is where you're trying to effectuate the district court's decrees. In fact, she's trying to do the opposite. She's trying to have one of them reversed. And this court was very clear in Inago, unequivocal, in saying that upon the filing of that stipulation of dismissal, the district court loses all power. And so Ms. Curley is asking this court to create an exception, to say, we didn't really mean what we said in Inago, We're adding a caveat. And that caveat is just for former putative class members who didn't act quickly after class certification was done.
But we can only get to this if you're wrong that we lack jurisdiction, right? I mean, you do agree with me that we don't have jurisdiction because this isn't a final order.
Yes, Your Honor.
End of story, right? It's only if we think there is a final order that we get to that question.
That's correct, Your Honor.
On the district court jurisdiction issue, did you make these arguments to the district court when she moved to intervene?
We did not, Your Honor. We did not. But jurisdiction, as this court has pointed out...
No, we did not,
Your Honor.
But you might have had a different result on the motion to intervene had you told the district court these things.
And if we go back, Your Honor, you can rest assured that we will remind Judge Ray of this issue and bring it up promptly.
Not remind him. Tell him for the first time.
We will certainly. Well, I say remind, Your Honor, because I suspect he's been following the appeal.
It's kind of like the renewal of the argument.
Right, true.
That was never made.
Your Honors, we ask this court dismiss Ms. Curley's appeal for lack of jurisdiction. If you find you had jurisdiction, we ask you to remand it to the district court, reverse the order granting the motion to intervene. And if you ultimately find jurisdiction in both places, we ask that you find that the district court did not abuse its discretion in denying class certification. Unless Your Honors have any other questions, no. I will sit down.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sellers, you've saved 2 minutes.
Your Honor, I have a number of points to make about the district court's jurisdiction, but I will take my guidance from Chief Judge Breyer that I won't spend my time on that. I would point out that Inago does not say that it terminates jurisdiction on anything other than the merits of the claims. And so there are a lot of collateral other issues. So let me turn back to this court's jurisdiction. So there is a series of cases, and you are aware of them, beginning with McDonald and Roper. McDonald admittedly was about timeliness, but Roper, Garrity, and Cooper and Librand all refer to McDonald as recognizing an independent path for absent class members to intervene for the purpose of taking an appeal of an adverse class certification decision after the original claims were terminated. Now, none of those decisions were discussed in the Baker versus Microsoft case. These decisions that have been in place for more than 50 years. It is extraordinary to think that the Supreme Court would be overturning that line of authority without ever addressing it. And indeed, it cites Cooper and Librand to support the position it took. And Cooper and Librand relies on McDonald. So
there are no, generally speaking, I think we don't imply jurisdictional holdings in cases that don't address jurisdictional issues.
Yeah.
So I get your point, and I think if I were in your shoes, I'd be making the same point too, so I get it. But there are no courts that I can tell that have really addressed this finality issue, assuming the validity of the post-dismissal intervention mechanism. No courts have really addressed whether or not you've got a final judgment to appeal from under 1291, right? And so we're sort of left in this world where there's no real governing precedent.
Well, I submit that we read the line of authority from McDonald onward as recognizing that upon the termination of the original claims and the relinquishment of the right to appeal the adverse class certification decision, that creates the appellate jurisdiction that absent class members can use to intervene. I just make one other point, and I know my time has expired, but I just for the record want to be clear that, and this may be something we have to take up the district court if that's where we go, but I just want to make clear that Ms. Curley's claim was timely.
Well, if it's timely, then how could we, I mean, how could there possibly be a final judgment? Because she can litigate her individual claim then.
But she wants to be able to avail herself of the jurisdiction that we believe is created by the line of authority from McDonald onward that she can intervene at this point.
When you save 2 minutes for rebuttal,
All right. Thank you, Your
Honor. I ought to hold you to it.
I understand.
All right. Let's go to the last case. Thank you.